Well, at any rate, it's in that general area over there, okay? It's either in the province of Champagne, because don't forget he was also in the wine business. He made his living not from writing commentaries, but he made his living from selling wine, okay?
All the rabbis owned a separate
living. Yeah, they had to work in order to make a living, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
As they said in Pirkei Avos.
Just as, and just as the Rambam, you know, was a physician. That's how he made his parnassah. And Rahm's Meisa is it's probably on the other side of the Rhine River, but you know all these communities were very closely associated with one another. Yeah, and of course, unfortunately, what happened was you know that subsequently you know the Crusades hit that part very very terribly, and communities were slaughtered. On Tisha B'Av we recite one or two of the elegies that were written to commemorate the destruction of the places like Speyer, Worms, and Troy, and so on. I mean, these
Worms
places.
Was in Germany, though.
Yeah, as I say, it's only being on one side of the river or being on the other side of the river.
Russians,
because you have the Rhine River separating France and Germany.
Okay. He wasn't killed, he died a natural death.
Oh, Russia? Yeah. Yeah. But the Crusades happened.
Of course, it says he went
right. Crusades were after Russia's death. All right, so getting back to our text over here, all right. So now the question that they ask is as follows. All right, at any rate, Rav Chanina and Rav Hoshaya, right, either they were questioning what happens about if you go to the gate of Yerushalayim, I mean the person bringing the Maaseh Sheni, or they were actually sitting in the gate of Yerushalayim, and they asked the question, and what happens if? What happens if what? So he says, Mahu, what is the din if somebody comes in to Yerushalayim, right? And he brings Maaseh Sheni, right? The minute he enters the gate of Yerushalayim, then what's the din? So he says, Pshita. It's obvious. Obvious what? That at this particular point, the Maaseh Sheni becomes sanctified, as we said. The walls of Jerusalem are going to make it sanctified, right? Yeah. And there has to be eaten over there. So what kind of a kash is that? So they say, all right, how about hu bachutz? What about if the man is still just outside of the gate of Yerushalayim, just outside the wall in which the gate is fixed, right? Umasoy bifnim. But, you know, he has a great big basket of stuff that he's carrying, and he's carry it in front of him, and that already is within Yerushalayim. Okay.
his Maaseh Sheni precedes
right.
him.
Right, he's carrying Maaseh Sheni in his basket over there. So they say in that case, kilotuhu mechitzes. And then that means then that the walls of Yerushalayim, this is what they mean by the mechitza over here, you know, like our mechitza over here, right, the walls of Yerushalayim have already literally caught it. What do I mean caught it? In other words, they have now...
It's in their boundary.
It's now within their boundary, and therefore it has now become sanctified, and you cannot be fighted. You have to eat it.
Well.
Except under the circumstance that we said, you know, if it suddenly becomes stomach. But otherwise, it must be eaten. All right. So good. So, of course, what do we have to say? That even though he physically is not quite within the walls of Yerushalayim, but by virtue of the fact that his bundle is already in Yerushalayim, that is passed, so the bundle is what he's carrying that should be the determining factor in this case, and automatically it is now sanctified by Sashayim. All right, so now they ask the following question. Who bifnim? What if he had come inside Yerushalayim? Right, umasoy bachutz, but what he's carrying is still outside. Mahu, what's the din in that case?
Yeah, can he go out and redeem it?
Right, theoretically,
you go out and redeem it.
Well, it's not going to work that easy. But that would be the supposition. You're absolutely right. I mean, if we say in case A it works this way, then we should say that case B works just the opposite,
sure.
Right? Hi, Phil. How are you? So they say, Bahu, tell me, well, what is the din then? So he says, well, the din we learned from something that we had before, that was taught previously, namely what? Not a Marcus, but someplace else. Okay, he says, Tanelu hahu sovo. b'davei Rabbi Shimon ben Yochanan. A certain scholar who was an elderly scholar, in other words, he's been around a long time, he's been learning all his lifetime, right? And he was in the school of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, okay? So he taught the following. He taught that the pasuk where it says, "Ki yirchak mimcha habokom," that if the place is too far from you, right? Where we said in that particular case, in other words, it's not yet within Yerushalayim, then what? You can redeem it, right? So he says, that means memilu ucha, which is a very difficult word over here, because the implication is memilu ucha, that, you know, from that which he is full of. That what is he full of? He's full of whatever he's bringing in to it, all right? So, we would say at first blush, what? That therefore the din would be that as long as the stuff is outside yet,
you can still redeem
that it's not sanctified. Yeah. You should be able to redeem it, right? And yet, it's not as simple as all that. Okay? Why do we say it's not as simple as all that? Because, let's take a look at the Rashi over here. Okay? Mimiluucha. That's right after where we had that reading of Yosef Rabbi Chanina, right? The third big line.
Right.
Okay? Mimiluucha. He says, Bekol milui shelecho, for everything with which you are full, namely, umaso shel odom, and what a person is carrying, right? Choshim miluo. This is considered what he is full of. Okay? I have to tell you that today in Eretz Yisrael, for example, they use a variation on this word, malai, meaning for all the stock that's within the store. You understand? As for example, they'll have a say, bifsa. Bifsa means literally campaign, but what it means in Eretz Yisrael is that that they're having a sale. The malai is everything, that all the stock within, all right? So you can see how many words take on a new meaning in modern Hebrew, okay? But it's still, we see it's a related idea. So, whatever a person is carrying, says Rashi, this is his milui, right? The lo seimon, that you shouldn't say, mimcho means only mimiktsotcha, you know, that only a part of what you have. The cholzman sherochak mitzotcha, yehei, that as long as some part of you is far away, then you can still redeem it. This would be the first blush, right? Elo. Mm-hmm. But if we say ki yirchak mimiluucha, if it's far from everything with which you are full, which means not only what you're carrying, but also you included. In other words, you and whatever your position, right? So as long as that's far away, per day, you can redeem it. Avol kashato bifnim. However, when you are already within the side of Yerushalayim, right? O masacho bifnim, or what you're carrying is already in Yerushalayim, as we said in the previous case, where the basket full of stuff is already in Yerushalayim, even though it's on the outside, we said it's now sanctified. So Rashi's comment now is that the milu ucha implies more than simply that he's carrying something, even though it has not entered the portals. It means both you and your burden
are
considered like one.
Like one, yeah.
Right. Considered like one. So, yeah, so, so today, Abol Kishato Bifnim, you're inside, oh, Masracho Bifnim, or your burden has already been inside, Lo Racha Kamokim Miluucha. Then in that case, we can no longer say that Yerushalayim is too far off from your fullness. The Shuv Lo Sibdehem. At this point, you can no longer redeem it. So it makes no difference whether you're carrying it right behind you, but you're already in Yerushalayim, or whether you're carrying it in front of you and it's in Yerushalayim, even though you're not behind. In any case, it has now acquired the sanctity of being within the walls of Yerushalayim, right? And you can no longer redeem it. Elo v'yachalto sham, but rather What do? You have to eat it over there in Yerushalayim. Okay. So now they ask another kasha on this. Boy, Rav Papa. So Rav Papa asked the following question. He says, "Nokit lei bekanyamai." Let's say that it's not, let's say, dragging over his shoulder, that he's carrying it on his back or something like that. But let's say he's only carrying it on a stick. Kanya is like the word cane in English, you know. He's carrying it on a stick or on a cane. That's where his bundle is. So although he's walking, and I don't even know if it means necessarily that it's on his shoulder, but let's say that he's just dragging it along, you know, it's tied to it, and he's just carrying, you know, he's dragging the stick, and the bundle drags behind him. Okay? But at any rate, how does it mean that if he's in Yerushalayim, but that's on a stick outside Yerushalayim, is it sanctified or not sanctified? So they say, take him, sakasha. They don't resolve the question. Take all always means, you know, that at this particular point, we have no answer for you. Okay?
Don't carry it on a stick. No.
What does the word take mean? Really, it's from an Arab word, an Aramaic word, which means it stands the way it is right now, unresolved. Okay? Take. But the popular interpretation of the word teiku is that it is an abbreviation. Abbreviation for what? An abbreviation for Tishbi, Yisores, Kushis, Vaboyis. In other words, when Eliyahu HaNavi comes along, then he will solve all these things that now are simply unresolved questions. Okay. Since we're talking about modern Hebrew usage, you know what the word teiku was used today for? A tie and a ball game.
Tie and ball game.
Tie and ball game.
It's been unresolved. Unresolved.
Yeah. Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's interesting to make a study of how words are used and how they change in meaning, acquire new meanings and everything else. Okay.
Good basis for a book.
Right. No, they're hot side, you know.
About mountain side.
All right. So at any rate, Rav Papa's question is unresolved at the moment. Okay, we don't know. Don't have an answer. All right. Since it's unresolved, so we'll go on to something else. Omer Rav Asi, Omer Rav Yochanan. Rav Asi said the name of Rav Yochanan. He says, "My so sheni, Moshe chayom nolav." Tell me, at what particular point are you going to be liable to the punishment of Malchus for violation of the laws of Maaser Sheni? In other words, either, as we said, eating, well, that is a question, but obviously it is based on the original premise of what? If you eat Maaser Sheni, which is Tahor, outside of Yerushalayim, that should be a cause for Malchus, right? It should be a cause for Malchus. All right. Or if you eat Maaser Sheni, which is unclean within Yerushalayim, that should also be a cause for Malchus. Or if you yourself are unclean, even though you eat Maaser Sheni, which is in the state of Tahara, also a cause for Malchus, right? So the question is, at what particular point does this click in? When does it take effect? Okay? So the answer that Rav Yochanan gave, as quoted by Rav Asi, is Mishero'o Pneachema, which means that the minute that the Maaser Sheni gets into the wall of Yerushalayim, literally it sees the wall, but obviously it doesn't mean that it looks at it from 20 feet away, you know, because we said before what? That even if he's Pesia Achas, even if it's only one footstep outside the walls of Yerushalayim,
he's still as if he was.
Right,
him.
Exactly. But I have to tell you, we're going to see a different interpretation now also given over here. Okay? It says, "My Tama." It says, for what reason? Because the Pasuk says, you have to eat it before the Lord your God. In other words, it has to be eaten where? That's Yerushalayim. Okay? Shana b'shana is put in brackets only for the simple reason the whole pasuk says that they are shana b'shana. Year after year, you have to eat it in the presence of the Lord. In reality, of course, b'aser sheni is not eaten every single year, but it has to be eaten in its proper year. What are the proper years for eating b'aser sheni? So, if we think always in terms of a seven-year cycle, the first year of the cycle, you have both b'aser rishon and b'aser sheni. In other words, first he has to separate 10% and give it to the Levi, okay? And then the next 10%, naturally the 10% of what is left now, you understand? In other words, it's going to decrease all the time. But still is 10% of what is left. So that he brings to Yerushalayim, and that's the maaser that he has to eat over there. Okay?
Levi also has to give the Kain part of it.
Yes, Levi has to give to the Kain. He has to give what we call Trumas maaser. He has to take a certain percentage, 2% or something like that, of what it is that he's received and give it to the Kohen, okay?
Seems like everything is on a volunteer basis. Who knows about this? Is he recorded? Is he, that he hasn't shown up, so to speak? You know, with the,
you know, you ask a very good question.
Because he's on his own, the honorable system or whatever.
Everybody, right. You're absolutely right. In other words, every Jewish farmer was expected really to keep a record and to figure out exactly what he has been able to gather and how much he owes in various percentages. 100% right about that, okay? We have in Pirkei Avos a statement by Rabbi Gamliel where he says, Ve'alta aser umodus, which means don't give your tithes by guesswork. In other words, don't simply estimate by eye that this is 10% and so on. Which, naturally, what does it imply? It implies that you actually have to sit down and you have to measure it. See. Sure, it's time consuming and so on. But let's look at it from this point of view. From the point of view of a person who is observant, he wants to fulfill the words of the Torah. He wants to fulfill the mitzvahs and do them to the very best of his extent, the way a mitzvah should be observed, okay? So there is a religious obligation upon a person to do it. Of course, unfortunately, some people, you know, were not quite that careful. And this is why you have this whole business of tevel that we'll be coming to, which we've had before and so on, namely, what is tevel? Tevel is any kind of a food which should be liable to the various dues that have to be taken from and from which it has not yet been taken. Whether it's first meiser, whether it's second meiser, whether it's third meiser, meiser shlishi, is what we call meiser ani. That you give in the third year and in the sixth year of the seven-year cycle instead of meiser sheni. So the meiser sheni is for years 1, 2, 4, and 5 in the cycle. Meiser Oni is the third year and the sixth year. Okay? And of course, Meiser Rishon is in every one of the first 6 years of the cycle. However, when Shemitah comes, in other words, the seventh year, then there are no tithes. Why? Because everything is supposed to be available to everybody. In other words, we give up private ownership for that particular year. So since it's we don't have private ownership, so we're not obligated to give maaser at that time, okay? But at other times, as I said, you have to figure out.
Well,
and if a farmer thinks
it's right, then is like many things in the religion, it's your own personal need to fulfill what is
right.
Proper.
Absolutely.
And then even if the circumstances change.
Yeah.
That he still carries out his requirement. In other words, that instead of having food, he's now going to sell it.
Right.
And after he sells it, he's still on his own, but nobody's checking up.
Yeah, well, we said with the Maaser Sheni, the fact that he sells it, he's doing that in order to be able to convert it into money, and with the money, he has to take Yerushalayim and still spend the, you know, that money on food. Right, he can't put it into the bank. He can't take that money back with him. You know,
well,
he has to spend it all.
I sort of get the picture that the only reason that I would do that if I got that far with the requirement that maybe it was going to spoil or something of that nature.
Yeah.
So he quickly sold it or converted it or ate it or whatever it is.
He cannot eat it.
He can't eat it. Well, I'm saying, but he converts it to money.
Well, if he converts it to money, then that
because
food
a reason
that he has sold, as we say, it's yotzeh l'chulin. It's now no longer has any sanctity attached to it, and it can be eaten by anybody, and makes a difference.
Again,
yeah, it could be eaten.
Could
be eaten in a state of purity or impurity. It doesn't make any difference because it's chulin at this particular point. Okay. But the money that he's brought into Yerushalayim, this becomes sanctified, so to speak, in that he must spend all that money on eating and drinking, he and his family, and he can invite the poor people, everybody. Levi, you invite as many people as you want to come and share with you, but the money must be spent specifically for that purpose, so that you can fulfill the mitzvah, so machtol of day of Hashem Lekecha. Rejoice before the Lord your God. Yeah.
Could you bring Maaseh Sheni in the form of an animal? Like a sheep or a goat?
Not really. That, no. But we do have another mice, and that's called Mice of Behemoth.
Mice of Behemoth?
Yeah. It's another din. Mice of Behemoth is a din that we find in the last chapter of Sefer Vayikra. Parsha B'Kokosai. Very that over there. It's written over there, B'chol Masa Boker Vatzon, the tithe of either cattle or tzon. Tzon means that we usually translated sheep or flock, but in reality tzon in Hebrew, at least in the language of the Bible, refers not only to sheep but also to goats.
Ezim is goat, though, isn't it? Ezim is goat.
Yeah, correct. But tzon in this case is an inclusive term. Right? It includes both sheep and goats, okay? Kol asher yavor tachas hashovet, everything which goes underneath the rod, who are Syria Kodesh Hashem, the tenth one shall be holy unto the Lord. So what does that mean? So Gemara explains that they would have a pen, you know, you have a stockade in which you keep animals, okay? And when you have newborn ones, you take these newborn sheep, goats, whatever it may be, right? Or calves, right? You let them run through a special, you know, like a chute over there, you know, like you see sometimes in the rodeo. You ever go to a rodeo? Yeah. The chute. And each tenth one, he had to take the stick, dip it in red paint, and put it on top of the animal. So he knew that that was Maaseh.
The tenth one.
Right. And then what did he do? He ate it. It had to be eaten. Okay, that was called Maaseh Boker. Okay,
but not in, he doesn't have to bring it to the Yerushalayim.
That's already a different problem. But that actually he ate, right? So that was sanctified too. That you know that he had to eat it. Okay. So see, the number 10 plays an important. 7 is important, 10 is important, 3 is important, you know, that's why they say Echad B'Yedeh, Shtai B'Yedeh, and so on and so on. Huh? Bokor, Bokor Batzon, right? In other words, every 10th animal, okay? Yeah. Alright. So. Yeah. Alright, so the question was, okay, may Yemotzei Chai V'No Lav, right? At what point, you know, do you become liable to Malkus if you fail to do the right thing with Maaseh Sheni? It says, Mishara Pneachem, right? When it sees, not when the person sees, literally, but when it sees, namely what? When the food sees the wall of Jerusalem. In other words, once it's there, it's past the boundary of Yerushalayim, and that's it. My Tamo de Amakra, so what is the reason? Because the Torah says, what if they have Shem Lekecho Tochlenu, right? Uchsiv, and then another pasuk says, "Lo sechal lechol bisharecha." You cannot eat it anywhere in your own private homes. Literally, bisharecha means within your own gates. In other words, outside of Yerushalayim. So we know that, and that's the case. It has to be eaten. So he says this establishes a rule. Remember, this is what Ravatzi is saying. The name Rabbi Yochanan. He says, "Kol hecho, wherever." The Korinin Bailiftei Hashem Lekecho, Tochlenu, that wherever the pasuk which says before the Lord your God applies, you must eat it. So Karinin Bay, so Lo Suchal Lechol Bisharecha. Then we also have to read in conjunction with it, or we have to imply, in other words, we have to apply also the pasuk Kilo Suchal Lechol Bisharecha, that you're not allowed to eat it outside of Yerushalayim in your own private homes, okay, where you live. Lechol Heyachor. And wherever he says the Lo Karinin Bay, Lifnei Hashem Elokeinu Tochlenu, but wherever this application of not being before the Lord your God, in other words, outside of Yerushalayim, right? Where that applies, then in that case, my finger went to the wrong line. All right. Yeah. We're on the fourth line. Now, from the bottom right, where it does not apply, then in that case, we do not apply the pasuk. What? So, in other words, what is the implication? The implication is, in other words, that you could eat it, right? As long as it has not yet been in Yerushalayim, then you can eat it anywhere. This is the implication, all right? Now, I want to turn to the Tosfos for a minute. Okay?
Where do you want to go?
There's a little one, the one that says, Omer Rabbi Yochanan.
Okay?
Omer Rabbi Yochanan says, "Mimosay matzu sheni chayu molot." Right when, and they gave the answer, "Mishiyur p'nei abayis." He says, "For kosher." It's a difficulty to understand what Rabbi Pov is saying over here. Why? Rather, what Rabbi Yochanan is saying over here. It says, "The kevon, the kodem shiyur p'nei abayis," because, in other words, the implication is that as long as it is still outside of Yerushalayim, right? Then what? Achinami demutu la'ochlo chutz, right? So, in other words, the implication is that you are permitted to eat Ma'aser Sheni as long as what? As long as it has not yet come into
Yerushalayim.
Even though you're taking it to Yerushalayim, then you change your mind at the last minute, and you ate it. Okay? So in came, if that's the case, Loma huskak liyolam l'tois ma'aser sheni, so why then would the Torah say that you have to redeem it if you can't take it into Yerushalayim? In other words, if we say only on the basis that if it's not in Yerushalayim, you can eat it, so why would the Torah then say that you have to redeem what you cannot bring into Yerushalayim and take it over there? So the Yeshlomah, therefore Tosfos says as follows. He says, Devadai lekolad. He says, definitely, he says, there is not a negative prohibition over here. And of course, what have we been learning time and again in this Masechta about Bacchus? We learned that Malchus can only be applied if you have violated what kind of a law?
A positive law.
No.
A negative law.
Right. If you violated a negative law, then there is a punishment for you for having violated the law which was prohibited to you by the Torah, so that you deserve Malchus. Of course, we said you have to be warned, it has to be applied by the Beis Din, and so on and so forth, it doesn't work simply that somebody, Joe is going
to
come around the corner with a bite and give you a pork clip and so on. You see, it has to go through an entire procedure,
but you can rectify it.
Yes, we learned also that in many cases it can be rectified, right, if there is an affirmative action clause that's attached to it. As we learned, of course, the classic case of Nosar, where the Torah says that you're not allowed to leave over from the sacrifice until either the following morning or the morning after, depending upon the nature of the sacrifice that we're talking about, right? And then what does it say? Va'anosa v'yom ha'shlishi bo'esh yisarev. But what remains over on the third day, when it becomes nosar, according even to the extreme limit, it has to be burnt in fire. So in other words,
if you violated
the law and you left over, which you shouldn't have, you should have consumed them before, but you still have something that you do to rectify it, namely
you burn it,
and that way, by getting rid of it, you get yourself out of getting Malkus.
Yeah,
although one minority, very minority of you said you deserve Malkus anyway, but we didn't poskin that way. All right. So he's saying then that therefore, obviously, if it hasn't gotten into Yerushalayim as yet, right, the Vadai like a lot, then there is really no law that you have violated at this particular point, and therefore what? You cannot get Malkus. But Avol Asa Ika, nevertheless, as Tosfos, still there is an affirmative action that you are violating. Dichsiv, because the Torah says with Sata Kesabiyotcha, you are to literally bind up the money, in your hand and take it with you. So Avol below Padilla, but if you have not redeemed it, lo, you can't do it. Okay, so in other words, what Tosfos is implying is, okay, maybe legally you don't deserve Malkus, you're not going to get Malkus. But still, if you eat the Maaser Sheni without redeeming it outside of Yerushalayim, you understand? What you're doing actually is to violate an affirmative command. And what is the affirmative command? That you should bring it to Yerushalayim as long as it is Tahor and you're Tahor. There's no question about that. And if you can bring it, then redeem it.
But don't eat it.
But don't eat it up without even redeeming it, first of all. Even though you're not going to get Malkus. But still, it's not right morally to do it. A command is still a command.
Exactly.
Okay. Mesbeit. So, we ask the following objection. Okay. Rabbi Yossi, old man. Rabbi Yossi says, coin, this is very technical. You have a coin. Shall also be yodei to eino shel tefel. He has acquired a fig, which is tevel. And tevel, remember, we said that the proper dues have not been taken
yet
from it. Okay. And he knows that this fig is tevel. He knows it. Okay. He bought it in the market, and he knows that the person who sold it in the market was not careful, exactly. Or maybe, somebody gave it to him, and he knows that this person is not very scrupulous about doing it, so the presumption is that it's tevel. Okay?
Okay.
Of course, we have another category of more, of a bigger doubt, and that's what we call demai, where we don't know. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But here, tevel implies that definitely we know that
it was.
Didn't take out what they should have taken out. Okay? So, Omar, if he said, Te'enozu, this fig, Trumosa be'uktza, where the okets is, the okets is the stem that hangs onto the tree, okay? With an esrig, we have two different ends. Obviously.
Pitim and
Esrig. Right. One of them we call the pitim. That is only that we find in an esrig. You don't find it in anything else. That's the thing that comes out at the bottom. But what do you call, the stem on top, where it comes off the branch that way. It hangs onto the branch and you take it. That's called the orchids. Okay? So in this case, the fig doesn't have, of course, a pitim, but it has an oketz. All right. So he says, all right. Says, Trumoso be'uktza. I declare that where that oketz is, this little part is going to be designated as the truma. of this particular thing. Okay? Maisa Rishon Betzona, where the northern part of this fig, Rashi says, in other words, if it turns towards the east, okay? And he says, what is to the north of this? This is my submission. I declare this my submission, okay? Umasa Shane Vidromo. And, you know, my Sashani is what's on the south, okay? My submission to the north part of the fig, and my Sashani to the south part of the fig, right?
How did they get the word south from Droma? I mean, how does that. Isn't there another word for south?
Sure. Yeah. Bible uses also the word negev.
Negev.
Right, right. Yeah. But there is a difference. Difference is only this. Number one, Dorom is the generic word for south. Okay? Oh. Negev, strictly speaking, replies only to the southern part of Eretz Israel. And why is it called the Negev? Because it's usually associated with the root, which means the nagev. The nagev means to dry up something. For example, how do you say a towel in Hebrew? It's magevet. It comes from this root.
Magevet.
The moon dropped out.
Magevet.
Magevet. Magevet. So I talk Ashkenazi, but it's magevet if I talk Israeli.
Magevet.
Right, yeah. So that's a towel. Why? Because what do you use it for? For drying, okay? So that therefore Negev represents the arid part of southern Eretz Israel, okay? Now, there is also a part of Eretz Israel that they designate as the Dorom, as the south.
That's not the Negev, though?
It's not the Negev. In general, you might say that, you know, the Negev is to the south, right? It's Dorom, but in Eretz Israel, in reality, I don't know if you can picture to yourself the city of Be'er Sheva, okay, is considered like the northern capital of the Negev, okay? In other words, it's the Negev region itself starts just a little bit before you actually hit Be'er Sheva, okay? And anything, you know, from Be'er Sheva right down to Eilat is technically the Negev, although they also have other areas based upon the biblical connotations that the, you know, they use names like Aravah and other places and so on, okay? But in general, the whole area from that point down is called Negev.
That goes all the way to the east coast?
It goes all the way down to the south, the southernmost coast, in other words, to the Red Sea.
Yeah, but how about the east coast?
Yeah, well, it applies to the east. You see, you have, you know, mountains area that leads up to the Jordan, actually up to the Yam Kineret. I mean, up to the Yam HaMelech, up to the you know, the Dead Sea, as they call it. Of course, we call it the Salt Sea. Okay, so that is part, and you know, that's an area which today, you know, lies between Jordan and Israel. Okay.
Negev abuts the Sinai.
What? Negev also abuts the Sinai. Absolutely. There are those who say geologically the Negev is really part of the Sinai, but we're not talking about geology. We're talking about right now political divisions, right? Okay. So that's the Negev. So what is the Dorom? So the answer is, that's the area which is north of Be'er Sheva. It goes to the Mediterranean coast and includes places like, for example, Ashkelon and Gedera and places like that and so on, okay? In other words, it's an area to the south of Tel Aviv, to the south of Yerushalayim, but not quite as far south yet as as the Negev. Okay, so that's the Dorom. Okay, and then of course you have the center part of the land, and then of course you have the north and so on, and you know, it's divided into places, you know, like you have Yehuda, and then to the north of it you have Ephraim, or as they call it, you know, Yesha. Yesha stands, you know, for what used to be the ancient kingdom of Israel, in other words, the ancient kingdom of Ephraim, okay? No, the Yeshua, the Yud stands for Yehuda. The Shin, stands for Shomron, which was the ancient capital of Malchus Ephraim or Malchus Yisrael, whichever name you want to give it, okay? And the Ayin, of course, stands for Aza, because there are Jewish settlements also bordering on the Gaza Strip. There are Jewish settlements there, which I visited quite a few years ago. Some lovely places.
And few in number, though.
Right. These are Jews who have guts. Take my word for it. They are gutsy Jews. And most of the areas, you know, who settles there? Frum people settle over there. They establish yeshivas, and, you know, they do agricultural work. That's what they make their panasa mostly.
Yeah.
Except that there is a little place also on the shores of the Mediterranean to the south of Gaza where they have a place, you know, they have hotels, restaurants over there you can go. And that's called Chof de Kalim, in other words, the palm tree beach and so on and so
forth. Are there any Jews in Gaza itself? Are there any Jews?
No. Gaza. They would tear them to pieces if they actually lived within Gaza itself. I don't know whether they actually ever lived within Gaza, but they lived in the area around it. That's what we talk about when we say about Gaza. In other words, Gaza and Jews will live over there. It's really the areas bordering upon it. And it could go down to the Egyptian border,
the Egyptian
by the way.
Border, right.
Goes on right down to the Egyptian border. Right over there. The extreme southwest. Southwest. But not southeast. Southwest. That's true. Gaza, that's right. Gaza was a Philistine city, but so was Ashdod and so was Ashkelon. Both of them are very fine Israeli cities today.
Did Samson live in Shimshon?
Yeah,
Gaza?
Yeah, in Gaza, that's where he pulled down the gates over there, pulled down the temple. So, right. Yeah. Okay, let's go down to the bottom of the page.
Go to the next
All right. Yeah. All right. So, this Kohen. Right, he gets hold of a fig, which he knows is tevel. He knows it hasn't been.
So he decides to
bring. Right.
Give
so he says, "Okay." The oketz, as we said, in other words, where the stem is, this is I designate as being truma. What's in the north, I designate as maaser rishon. What's to the south of this fruit, right? I designate as maaser sheni. Assuming that the Hishnas Maaser Sheni, that this is a year in which Maaser Sheni applies, as we said, the first, the second, the fourth, and the fifth year of the cycle, right? Vehu b'Yerushalayim, and he is in Yerushalayim. Okay, get the picture so far. O Maaser Ani, or he says, let's say that the south is going to represent Maaser Ani, right?
For the poor people.
Yeah, in other words, this is the Maaser that he should be giving to the poor person, right? The Hubig Bulin, and he's not in Yerushalayim itself. He's outside Yerushalayim because Maaser Ani can be eaten anywhere. It doesn't have to be eaten in Yerushalayim. Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim, but Maaser Ani anywhere, right? Acholo, and what did this Kohen do? He ate it. Okay?
Yes.
Guess what? Loike Acha. He gets one set of Schmitz. Why? So, as Rashi explains, the Lo Hotzio Midei Tevel, he did not actually take it out of the state of Tevel, the Kriyas Shem Zeh, by designating these different things. Why? Because Ko'ochil Masir Rishon HaTovel Letrumas Maiser. Guess what he forgot to take out? He forgot to take out a Trumas Maiser from it. So, as long as even one thing has not been taken out that he should have taken out, therefore he deserves Malkus, right? For eating what? For eating tevel, right? But since he's a Kohen, that part that he designated as Truma, he's not going to get Malkus for that, because Truma is what a kohen is permitted to eat, yeah, right?
If he's already designated, there's no longer tevel, is it?
You know, I'm puzzled by this myself. I have to tell you in all honesty. Because according to the law of the Torah...
It's designated, it's already, it's like given by...
Yeah, no, but that's not my objection to it. According to the law of the Torah, who is required to give Tumas Maaser? Naturally, it's the Levi who is expected to give Tumas Maaser. He has to give to the Kohen.
Right.
Here is a Kohen. I would assume that a Kohen would be free...
To do what he would like.
From, you know, having to give to Tumas Maaser. What is he going to give to another kohen? He could even himself, no? But nevertheless, as we see, according to this particular teaching, right? And again, who was this? It's Rabbi Yossi, right? According to Rabbi Yossi, he deserves a set of malkas because he ate tevel. What was the tevel? He didn't separate the Tumas Maaser. But Truma, he won't get it. Why? Because he's a Kohen. And he's entitled to eat that, okay? But the Truma Spicer, he didn't get, okay? So that therefore he deserves, okay? He have a Omar Truma Spicer b'emtzer. You saw. Then, have a Motzi Ochel Kula, says Rashi. Reading the Rashi, the fourth, third and fourth line over there.
Mm-hmm.
Says, you know, if you had taken the trouble to say, and I separate Trumas Meiser in the middle, then he says he could have eaten everything and he would not get Malkus. He wouldn't get Malkus at all because he's entitled. Maybe the Habit, Trumas Meiser, the Kohen. Who Kohen? Inasmuch as what? Trumas Meiser belongs to a Kohen and he's a Kohen, right? You understand what I'm saying?
Of course.
So he should be. All he had to do is to say that I hereby designate that what's in the middle over here, not to the north, not to the south, and so on, not at the stem, right? But in the middle, a certain little area over there, I say hereby designate that this is Tumas Maaser, and then he could have eaten the whole thing because then he would be entitled to it. But he failed to do what he should have done.
From the Maaser reason.
Right. Now, as far as Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni, he says Lo Loki, says Rashi, right? He's not going to get Malkus for either Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni. The Ho Af LeZorim Shomri, because you know, you don't have to be a Kohen in order to eat Maaser Rishon or Maaser Sheni. Okay, well, actually, to eat Maaser Rishon, you have to be a Levi. Anyway. All right, but Maaser Sheni, there's no question. Anybody could eat it as long as he followed the regulations. Okay, all right. So the Kohen then deserves one. The Zor Sha'acholo, and what if he was a non-Kohen, right? And he ate this fig, which was Tevel. So guess how many Schmitzen he's going to get? Lokishtayim. He deserves two. He had no business eating Tumas Maaser, which should have been separated from it, and likewise not allowed to eat Truma, because Truma belongs to the Kohen. All right, so therefore he gets two sets of Malkus. Then he says, She'ilu batchila acholo, eino lo ke'elo achaz. If he had eaten everything to begin with, without designating anything,
he'd get really stressed.
Right, but he starts him to designate them. Why did he forget to designate everything he was supposed to designate? So that's why he gets Malkus. Okay. So, and then the Gemara continues. We'll stop in a couple of minutes. So it says, Tamod Isay B'Yushalayim. The reason why he only gets two sets of Malkus is, as I said before, because, you know, we're talking now about the non-coin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's in Yerushalayim. Okay? Now, that could also apply to the coin, by the way. But they're questioning, however, not the coin at this particular point.
We assume the coin is in Yerushalayim also.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right now they're questioning the non-coin. If the non-Kohen is in Yerushalayim, then he hasn't violated only, he has violated only the Trumas Maisa that she should have separated, and the Truma that he should have separated. Okay?
What about the
Maser Rishon? Well, you could sort of lump it together with the Truma. Okay? First of all, not everything necessarily has to be Truma. Truma comes from, from grain, for example. Okay? All right. So, at any rate, he would be entitled to two because he didn't violate eating Maisa Sheni in Yerushalayim since he ate it in Yerushalayim. You understand? That's Talmud Issa B'Yerushalayim. So that he didn't violate it. But Hodbik Bulin, what if he ate the same thing outside of Yerushalayim? Then guess what? Like Yesholesh. He's entitled to how many?
Three
sets of Malkus. Okay, because he's violated that too, that he ate this, you know, the Maaser Sheni part, he ate it outside Yerushalayim. So, apparently, what are we saying? What we're saying right now is that, we said before that, outside of Yerushalayim, he doesn't get Malkus, right? Doesn't get Malkus if he ate it outside. This is what we said before, even though we said, as I read you the Tosfos over there, the Tosfos says he's violated an affirmative command by eating it outside of Yerushalayim when he should have brought the Maaser Sheni, which was Tohor, into Yerushalayim and eaten it over there. All right. So the local show is the Apagad the Lavroya, but that still belongs to God, even though he ate it without the food actually getting into Yerushalayim in the first place. So that he could have eaten the big bullen, but he didn't. Because what did he do? He ate the Maaser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim, and presumably, that he deserves a place for that. All right. So they say, but look, we said before on the previous page that if it hasn't got into Yerushalayim yet, then he can't get Malkus. So they come up with a new explanation. What is the new explanation? It says, the Ayalei the Afke. You know what we're talking about, where he gets three sets of Malkus? If he brought it in into Yerushalayim and then he took it out again and ate it outside Yerushalayim. So in that case, right, but if he hadn't brought it into Yerushalayim in the first place, then he wouldn't get any Malkus. Okay. So Ehoch, if that's the case, Maila Memra, how are we going to, how do we explain this business? So he says, Hochem Maaskin, what are we dealing with? He says, Kegain, Dayalinhu, Bituv Laihu. They brought it in while it was Tevel into Yerushalayim, right? Because Sobar and the Tana is of the opinion that Matono Shalei Hurmu, that those things that should be given as gifts, namely Maaser, Truma, and so on and so forth, if they had not yet been designated, right? It's Kamisha Huma the Danyan. Nevertheless, it's as if they had. In other words, it's as if actually the designation had taken place so that they have acquired their holiness. Sanctity, right, their holiness. The Sova Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yossi didn't say Matonish Le Hurmu Kemisha Humadokna. So that obviously then Rabbi Yossi, we have to say, is of the opinion that if even though those things that have been designated, that should have been designated and weren't, it's as if they were. So, the Otanya, what we learned, Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda Oimer Bishum Rabbi Yossi, that Rabbi Shimon ben Yehuda says in the name of Rabbi Yossi, Lo nechleku beishame beis hilel al peiro shelo nigmar malachton. There was no machlokes between beishame and beis hilel concerning fruits which had not yet reached a finished state. Which means what? Which and means right. Either that they're still absolutely unripe and not fit yet to bring into Yerushalayim, or in the case, let's say, of grain, there, what is the Gemar Malacha? Gemar Malacha, as we learned before, that he puts it into stacks, and then he has to smooth the pile. When he smooths the pile, then it's ready. That's considered Gemar Malacha. So, if it has not yet been done, B'yovi Yerushalayim, and for some reason or other, they go into Yerushalayim and go out again. In other words, they pass through Yerushalayim. She'yipoda, Masa Sheni Shalahem, the Masa Sheni that is in this food, right, can be redeemed afterwards. In other words, where? Of course, outside, right? Ye'yochel b'chol mokim, and eaten anywhere, all right? So, v'yamea nechtaku, what was the machlokus between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? It's al peirosh nigbar malachton yovlo b'Yerushalayim. This is in reference to fruit where the final touch did take place. In other words, they were ripe, whatever it may be. They passed through Yerushalayim. Shebeis Shammai yomrim. Beis Shammai says yachsim asu sheni shalahem yoyachal b'Yerushalayim. He says, you know what? The very fact that you took them out of Yerushalayim doesn't mean that you finish with them. You have to take them right back into Yerushalayim and eat them over there as Ma'aseh Sheni. They say the Lomrim, but they say, no, don't bring them back to Yerushalayim. They've gone in and out. Once you have them out, but nevertheless, what do you have to do with them? So Beis Hillel says, Yipodeh, let it be redeemed, right? In other words, you know, sold for money. The Yoche become welcome, and then the food can be eaten everywhere. And if you are of the opinion that that where what should have been designated and they haven't done yet is as if it had been, then wouldn't it mean that the walls of Yerushalayim have accepted it and therefore that it became sanctified? So Omar Rabbah, so Rabbah said Mechitza Lechol De'Araiso. It says, as far as eating is concerned, then the law is that the law of the Torah says that if you want to eat Ma'aser Sheni, then it has to be done in Yerushalayim, becomes sanctified, has to be done over there. But Mechitza Liklot, but simply the fact that if you pass through the walls of Yerushalayim, then automatically it becomes, even without eating it yet, it says this is the law of the Rabbanan. They made it in addition to the law of the Torah. It's not a law of the Torah, but it's the law of the Rabbanan, right? V'chi goes the Rabbanan, and when did the Rabbanan make this gezeira? When did they make this enactment? It says ki ise be'ene b'tivli. That's where it still remains tevel, and you can recognize it as being tevel. Excuse me. Well, it's still in its own state, but but if it is still tevel, it hasn't been separated yet, then you can take it out, in other words, and do what? Take it outside the city, there redeem it and everything else, and take out everything that has to be taken out, and so that way you'll escape getting malchus for it. Okay. Rabino Omar. So Rabina said, kegon denoket lebekanya. Hey, yes. Yeah, like, for example, let's say he takes it with his stick, right? V'tivshet by the Rav Popa. And that way I can understand the story of Rav Popa, namely what? That if he was carrying it on his stick, he's not going to get any malchus because it's still outside and not inside. Unlike where if he kept it on his shoulder, and we said that in that particular case, it's part of him. All right, so we have Baruch Hashem reached the new Mishnah on the Daf Chav Amud Aleph, and Mirtz Hashem, a week from tomorrow night, in other words, on Wednesday night, we'll go back to our usual time and we'll learn at that time.
Hashem.
So we have Shukriya to all of you, and I want to wish all of you a Gringen Tonus, as we say in French, Tzom Kal, as we say in Hebrew. Have a light fast, and let's hope that the weather will cooperate, and we should all feel well. We start with this brand new Mishnah right now, and of course it's based upon various psukim that we have in the Torah. Okay. You know what? It would be best if we take a moment just to distribute chumashim. We'll take a look at the sources first of all. Okay. So why don't we? All right, the first pasuk that we're going to look at is in
Parsha Kedoshim, chapter 19, very famous chapter. Okay, page 503 in our Chumash. All right, 503. All right. Preceding it in verse 26, which at this particular moment doesn't enter into our Mishnah because that really is dealt with in Maseches Sanhedrin. We have over there, first of all, it says Lesochel Adom, which means literally you shall not eat with the blood. This has about a million different interpretations in the Gemara. I won't go into them. And then it says lo shnachashu velo soinedu, which means that you shall not practice divination or tzitzing. In other words, fortune telling and so on. I mean, this is considered an idolatrous practice. Okay, now the next pasuk, next two pasukim, okay, deal again primarily, according to the Rambam, with idolatrous practices, although there are those who dispute and who say that this is Gezeiras HaMelech, that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam says don't do this and that's all there is to it. But as I said, the Rambam is usually looking for a rational explanation, and so he ties it in with what I said just now, namely that this was an idolatrous practice. Now, what does the pasuk say? So it says, first of all, it says Lo Sakifu Ba'as Roshchem, which means literally you shall not round out the corner of your head. Of course, actually, well, it says corner, but us, and, you know, but it really means, you know, both corners.
Pious.
Okay. Right. What we call payas, let's say. Do not round it out. And then it says, below tashchis eis pa'asikonecha, nor shall you destroy the corner, or corners, if you wish, of your beard. Right? And then the next pasuk says Beseret lo nefesh lo sitnu mipsachem, which means that you're not allowed to make a cutting